Blog Talk Radio.
And I'm Leo, and tonight we're going to, we got a bunch of union news we would like to present to you tonight. Some of it right off the AFL-CIO blog, which you can go to.
Which is
and,
AFL-CIO blog.
So, anyway.
And this article is by Max Richmond, President and CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And he sent this to the blog. It should be no surprise that Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security are issues driving voters in this election. A total of 49 million people depend on Medicare and more than 60 million on Medicaid and 55 million on Social Security. These programs touch the lives of virtually every American family in every community in our nation, yet candidates continue to dodge and deflect on their plans for these vital programs. We saw this strategy played out in full view during the first presidential debate. We will see some of the same when Vice President Joe Biden and Vice Presidential contender Paul Ryan meet this week, but I certainly hope not. Working people of all ages are tired of the political spin used by candidates who call benefit cuts reform and privatization preservation. Republican Party leaders have understandably been worried that voters will get a good look at their radical plans to end traditional Medicare by replacing it with privatized coupon care. They've adopted an avoidance strategy which was implemented extremely well by Mitt Romney in the first presidential debate. The election will likely determine the very future of these programs and thereby the economic futures of generations of middle and working class American families. So I say it's past time that the candidates get beyond political platitudes and phony promises. Voters must hold them accountable for the real life consequences of their plans for Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Here are a few of those consequences. The end of traditional Medicare. Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney understand that it's politically impossible to pass legislation ending traditional Medicare. However, their coupon care plan is a means to that end by putting traditional Medicare into a fiscally untenable position. Seniors will end up going back in time to the days before Medicare, where they will once again be at the mercy of private insurance companies. Coupon care gives seniors a voucher that loses value over time, meaning older Americans will pay more for less, while private insurance companies reap the gains. Contrary to the GOP claim of increased choice, the privatization plan will actually make it much harder for seniors to choose their own doctor. Benefit cuts for current and future Medicare beneficiaries. Governor Romney promised to repeal Obamacare on day one. That means on the first day of his administration, seniors would lose free preventative benefits and annual wellness exams. Prescription drug and premium costs would increase by hundreds of dollars per year. The Part D donut hole returns. Private insurance companies get their taxpayer handouts back, and Medicare's hospital trust fund would be bankrupt by the end of Romney's first term. So much for those cynical promises to leave current retirees untouched. The Romney-Ryan plan proposes cutting Medicaid's federal funding by more than $800 billion in the next 10 years, and even more in future decades. It does this by converting the current Medicaid program, which is jointly funded by the federal government and states, into block grants. This means that seniors would see higher costs for long-term services and supports, like nursing home care, because of cuts to Medicaid. The Romney-Ryan proposed Medicare cuts mean a loss of more than $2,500 annually for millions of seniors who are duly eligible for Medicare and Medicaid. Raises the retirement age, cuts benefits, and privatizes Social Security. Excuse us, folks. I think our dog wants to. Raises the retirement age, cuts benefits, and privatizes Social Security. Governor Romney and Representative Ryan have tried to avoid addressing Social Security as much as possible during this campaign. That's true. Likely because both men support private accounts. Both have also argued we should raise the retirement age and change the formula used to determine benefits. Raising the retirement age to 70, for example, would lead to an additional reduction ranging from 13 to 15% reduction for workers who need to file for early benefits at age 62. Add that to the cuts which resulted from the last time we raised the retirement age in 1983, and the total benefit reduction for a person who retires at 62 could be as much as 43 to 45%. Changing the benefit formula also cuts benefits even further. Not surprisingly, the Romney-Ryan plan for Social Security is all about benefit cuts for seniors and no change in revenue, including the most popular solution of lifting the payroll tax cap. If we are to believe the polls this week, Governor Romney's dodge and deflect strategy could be working. But with several more debates and a few weeks until the election, there's still time for working families to demand that the candidate ditch the political propaganda and mistruths and start giving it to us straight. The 2012 vice presidential debate, October 11th, is a good place to start. The National Committee has mobilized seniors in battleground states as part of its National Truth Tour campaign. Radio ads begin this week urging voters to ask candidates the tough questions about their plans for Social Security and Medicaid. That's good. I'm glad they're going to do that.
Is that done?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the talk about Medicaid and Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, I think this is a good article that I'd like to read, and it's from the...
That's from Ask Me?
Yeah, Ask Me Works.
I just got that in the mail.
And I'd like to read it. It's called President Romney's Plan. And it says, here's a sneak peek at what the administration of President Mitt Romney and Vice President Paul Ryan would look like for working families. Spoiler alert, it's scary stuff. It's Monday, January 21st, 2013. A seasonably cold day in Washington, D.C., dignitaries and well-wishers are huddled around the U.S. Capitol to watch as the president is sworn in and takes office. When President Romney and Vice President Ryan leave the inauguration ceremony, they take note of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce fitting since the chamber, whose mission is promoting legislation that benefits its corporate members, will call most of the shots in their administration. They don't bother glancing at the nearby AFL-CIO, the Federation of Labor Unions, that include AFSCME. Once installed in the West Wing, President Romney's first order of business is repealing the Affordable Care Act, a move that will deny more than 30 million Americans access to decent health care and allow insurance companies to return to the days of denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions. He's simply fulfilling his campaign promise. Higher tax bill for families. Then he and Vice President Ryan, cheered on by the small government crowd, begin their push to get the Romney-Ryan budget into law. Their budget includes tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans and the corporations for middle and corporations. For middle-class families with children, the tax bill will increase by more than $2,000 a year. Romney and President Ryan, Romney and Ryan, say that their budget, based on the Ryan plan that Romney called marvelous on the campaign trail, reduces the federal deficit. In reality, the spending plan adds $4.6 trillion to the deficit and is motivated by a desire to shrink and privatize public services and safety net programs such as Social Security. You can go to meetpaulryan.com to learn more about that. And it says they want to turn Social Security over to Wall Street and shuffle to the states the responsibility for funding Medicaid. The Medicare program for the poor and disabled using block grants. Additionally, many needy people who receive Medicaid in the beginning of their administration will not in years to come, as states trim costs and make it harder for people to receive help. Restricting union rights. Next, Romney turns his attention to the National Labor Relations Board, which prevents employers from interfering with workers' rights to form and join labor unions. Romney's wholehearted support supported Ohio Governor John Kasich's law to restrict the bargaining rights of state workers. Although that law was defeated in a referendum, Romney hailed the governor's attempt to limit the power of union bosses. He wants to appoint people to the NLRB who agree that unions stand as obstacles to growth and share his opposition to card check, which would make it easier for workers to join unions. Across the country, like-minded governors catch the president's anti-union fever. Of course, they're talking about Romney here, and this is if he were elected. Then it's time to go after the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, created by President Obama to enforce laws that outlaw discrimination in consumer finance. Romney and Ryan are eager to remove what they consider to be unnecessary regulations on business. And to the delight of their corporate benefactors and to Main Street's dismay, they've accomplished a lot, and it's only June. 160 days down, 1,285 to go. It sounds like a horror story for the middle class, and you can change that. Check AFSCME.org/volunteer to find out more about volunteering for President Obama's reelection campaign. And so anyway, just go to AFSCME.org. But I'm not. I have to admit, I'm not a big political operator here. But when you look at what's going on, and you see.
Well, the Republicans can hardly wait to get their hands on that money.
Yeah,
and you see what the bankers did.
You can expect
the same thing with your Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. They want it, and they're going to get it any way they can. They'll lie, cheat, and steal to get you to vote for them.
Yeah.
And if you're foolish enough to do that, then you'll deserve what you get.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I don't believe it, and I might get what your foolish vote causes. And a lot of other Americans who don't want people like that in office. But, you know, you only have one vote.
Yeah, and, you know, activism.
And hopefully it's recorded.
Yes.
That's another fear that I have because the voting machine controversy was never really settled.
No, it's still going to be happening this time around. So, but, they've denied hundreds of thousands of people voting rights this year all across the country.
Due to the ID thing.
Mm-hmm. And
the
changing
picture
districts,
ID. Yeah, redistricting.
You name it, and they, you can blame this mostly on the Republican Party for doing this. This is their favorite thing to try to restrict people from voting.
And they've done it very successfully,
especially in not blue collar, but Democratic areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, you know, they're doing it. They have done it in Florida. They've done it in Ohio, where they've actually. Strip the voter registry you know, of thousands and thousands and thousands of people.
And then to get your voting rights back is extremely difficult.
Yes.
Let's read about Walmart workers' continued demand for change, and this is by Mike Hall. Workers at Walmart are continuing their actions to win respect and bring change to Walmart with a demonstration today outside Walmart's Bentonville, Arkansas headquarters, and with strikes yesterday by workers at stores in Dallas, Seattle, Miami, Sacramento, California, and Orlando, Florida, and in Chicago and Washington areas. Kobe Harris, who earns $8.90 an hour after 3 years working at Walmart in Lancaster, Texas, told the New York Times, "We're protesting because we want better working conditions and better wages, and because we want them to stop retaliating against associates who exercise their rights to talk about what's going on in their stores." Some 200 Walmart workers, mostly members of Our Walmart, a worker-led organization, are at the company's annual investor meeting today, calling on Walmart and Chairman Rob Walton to address take-home pay so low that workers are forced to rely on public programs to support their families. They're also calling on Walmart to address understaffing that is keeping workers from receiving sufficient hours and is also hurting customer service. Some employees say that the company has not only refused to address these concerns that are affecting 1.4 million workers across the country, but has attempted to silence those workers who speak out and has retaliated against workers for raising concerns that would help the company, workers, and the community. The Walmart actions began last week in Southern California, where for the first time in history, Walmart workers struck. The one-day strike at several stores coincided with the announcement by the Global Union Federation, UNI, of the Walmart Global Alliance. UNI Head of Commerce, Elke Bossinger, told Salon.com's Josh Edelson that the new Global Alliance will coordinate joint actions in the coming months. Edelson writes, Bossinger emphasized that while many countries have laws that are more pro-union than the U.S., Walmart will do anything to avoid unions anywhere. She added that Walmart workers abroad understand that supporting U.S. workers is necessary for the sake of making sure that this model that the company has developed in the U.S. is not being exported. Could those joint actions include multi-country strikes? I wouldn't exclude it, she said. You can show your support for these workers by signing this solidarity letter, and they have one on this site. You also can get breaking news on work stoppages at Twitter, at Change Walmart, and at UFCW using the hashtag Walmart Strikers.
Oh, I support the Walmart folks, you know, so hopefully they can get something going there.
Yeah. $8.90 an hour doesn't seem like very much after working 3 years.
Ooh. This isn't this about minimum wage now. Let's see, what are we doing here?
What do you want?
I'm trying to get...
Listen to this, folks, while Leo is trying to get something. Romney says he believes in America, just not in its public services. I like that. I believe in America is one of Mitt Romney's favorite catchphrases, but he doesn't seem to believe in the public services that make America happen, or the workers who provide them. If he did, he wouldn't be proposing a plan to give the wealthy a tax cut, paid for with more taxes on nurses, teachers, bus drivers, social workers, librarians, and other workers. Workers like AFSCME member Carl Stanley, a water systems technician for the city of San Diego. He makes sure there's a steady supply of safe water throughout the area, including to Romney's home in La Jolla, California. It's disheartening for Stanley to turn over the TV and hear his work belittled by the man he keeps safe each day. People like Romney, I'm sure they never think about what people like me do for a living, even though water is a lifeline, says Stanley, a member of Local 127. Romney takes our work for granted, and you can hear it in what he says, bragging about firing people and saying we need fewer cops and teachers. And when Romney talks about tax reform, it's clear he has people like Donald Trump in mind, not Carl Stanley. In fact, the Romney's plan would reduce taxes an average of $87,000 for those who earn more than $1 million a year. Meanwhile, taxes for the average middle-class family with no children would increase by $2,000 annually. In GOP vice presidential nominee Paul Ryan, Romney found a soulmate who was equally committed to cutting taxes for millionaires while shrinking and privatizing public services. By contrast, President Obama wants to cut taxes for working men and women who are struggling. Romney and Ryan and their compatriots in the House of Representatives consistently stand in the way of these cuts. Not only that, but they also stand in the way of workers' rights. At the Republican convention, governors who had made a name for themselves by attacking collective bargaining were given primetime speaking slots as if they had done something to be applauded. Additionally, the platform the Republicans adopted at the convention would devastate the labor movement. They want to pass a nationwide right to work for less law, bar the use of members' dues for political purposes, and end the dues checkoff. All this is bad news for working families, and it's all the more reason our union is supporting President Obama. If Romney supported public services, he'd propose a tax plan that supports those services. If he supported working families, he would want to expand collective bargaining, not destroy it. As our Ask Me brother Carl Stanley says, our work is important, and if Mitt Romney doesn't get that, he doesn't deserve to be president. And I just read what Lee Saunders had to say. This was his speech. And he's president of AFSCME.
I wanted to read this because I thought it was quite frightening, actually. It says, where did all our pensions go?
Yeah.
It says, a total of 84,350 pension plans have vanished since 1985. This figure shocked Pulitzer Prize winner authors Donald L. Bartlett and James W. Steele, who just released their latest book, The Betrayal of the American Dream. Their chapter on retirement chronicles the heist of the American Dream's secure retirement by the financial elite, and is a very important section of the book, says Steele, who spoke with the AFL-CIO about the retirement crisis. Steele says, there is another number we should pay attention to, $17,686. That's the median value of the 401k accounts in 2011 for most working people. The amount in their 401k account would pay them less than $80 a month for life. What happened with retirement is almost what's happening with retirement is almost parallel to what you see happening in other parts of the economy, says Steele. The elitist has its agenda to eliminate pensions with a shift to 401ks, which cost companies less. Now there's a revenue stream for Wall Street and an obligation shift to the people with little or no experience understanding how to deal with their own retirement issues. This is typical of all the other things the economy elite has been doing for decades with deregulation, unrestricted free trade, and tax cuts. These things are all related. In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the amount of workers with access to pensions was significantly rising, while says Steele, we fully underestimated the speed in which the downturn would occur and how Congress went along and encouraged it. Bartlett and Steele write that the shift from defined benefit pension plans to 401(k)s began in the 1980s. As companies realized 401(k)s would substantially reduce corporate costs, and workers were told that the pensions no longer made sense and were outdated since people moved around from job to job. The 401(k) was marketed as more portable. Steele says 401(k)s were engineered by corporations as another way for the wealthy executives to set aside money. They were never intended to be a principal retirement plan, only a supplement. Once corporate America got on to this, the idea took root, says Steele. The entire obligation shifted to the employees. Congress ignored the concerns raised by trade unions and other pension rights organizations, and the consequences are dire for middle and lower income workers. This is so typical of what has been happening over the last two or three decades, says Steele. This is a slow, steady erosion of economic security Americans had or thought they had. And now economic pundits, corporate folks, and Wall Street people are saying people just have to work longer, in part because retirement plans now in place will not provide much security to people as they get older. Bartlett and Steele feature stories of average people who did everything right, saved, worked hard, but are still living on the edge of poverty because of policies that enhance the rich at the expense of everyone else. Over and over again, people thought they had something good. They were working hard, and then, through no fault of their own, they lost it all. Most people we talk to in the book are employed. People thought it was something they had done to lose their job or benefits. They didn't realize it was part of a broader pattern. There are great swaths of working people who are affected, and we think it's our fault. For most of these people, it's not their fault. It's just the way policy has been organized. Systematically dismantling pensions and retirement is the perfect example. With the decline of pensions, it's even more important to strengthen, not cut, Social Security benefits. Although the country dodged a bullet in 2005 when Bush's plan for Social Security privatization fizzled, Steele says, we still need to be vigilant to protect our benefits from the Wall Street casino. Don and I make this point that the 2008 recession wouldn't look a whole lot different from the Great Depression if we didn't have Social Security and Medicare, because there was no safety net then. And the economic elite, says Steele, attack Social Security because it's a large pool of money for Wall Street to play with. And nobody should kid themselves that they're not going to come back and try to implement some part of that privatization. The amount of money at stake is too good, and it's all they care about. Access to that money, not American workers.
That's absolutely right. They're salvated.
And you can purchase The Betrayal of the American Dream on Amazon.com. Okay. So I thought that was interesting to read. Did you let him?
Mm-hmm.
Let me just go back and look at something else. Would you like to take a quick break?
Why don't we have a little music break?
Give everybody a minute or two to chill out. I got a great song. I'm not going to play the whole thing. It's about 5 minutes long, but I will play about 2 or 3 minutes of it. It's called October Night.
Thank you.
move that over here. I just have a few little facts that I want to read quickly.
Yes, that, and I got one more PD that I want to read.
You could wait, and I'll do these small
sure.
things first, okay? Listen to this, folks. When you're listening to the debate tomorrow night, listen to really what Paul Ryan has to say, because 4.6 trillion just doesn't go as far as it used to. If Vice Presidential hopeful Representative Paul Ryan of Wisconsin got his way, Congress would pass a budget plan that adds $4.6 trillion to the national debt due to unfunded tax cuts, according to the Nonpartisan Tax Policy Center. And what will we get for our trillions? The Ryan plan not only extends the Bush-era tax cuts for the wealthiest 2%, it doubles down with even more tax breaks for the wealthy and prosperous corporations. And to help pay for these tax cuts, the Ryan plan would end traditional Medicare, privatize it, and leave us on our own with insurance companies. It would make it harder for seniors to get choose their own doctors, sharply increase costs for most seniors, and leave hundreds of thousands of seniors uninsured. Someone should let the chairman of the House Budget Committee know about that bum deal, too. Too bad that the chairman is Paul Ryan. I'd also like to tell you that, just to remind people, that as of this summer, 8 new provisions of Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act went into effect, and most of them have to do with women. Annual well woman visits will now have to insurance companies will now have to cover without a copay or a deductible. That's for all of these things. There are 8 things. The annual well woman visits, screening for diabetes, gestational diabetes, testing for HPV, counseling for sexually transmitted infections, counseling and screening for HIV, contraceptive methods and counseling, breastfeeding support, supplies and counseling, screening and counseling for domestic violence. It's also interesting to know that 2 out of 3 Americans support rising taxes on households with incomes of at least $250,000, according to Bloomberg Washington Post national poll. And also, U.S. families' net worth plummets nearly 40%. The Great Recession brought on by Wall Street greed and the related housing market collapse erased almost 2 decades of accumulated prosperity for the average American family, according to the Federal Reserve. The median family, they're richer than half of the nation's families and poorer than the other half, had a net worth of $77,300 in 2010, down from $126,400 in 2007, the Fed said. The crash of the housing prices explained 3/4 of the loss. The vast loss of wealth was compounded by loss of income as the earning of the median family fell by 7.7% over that same period. Pretty sad.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this one, many of you probably haven't heard of this group, but it's called Crossroads. And it was put together by Karl Rove and Ed Gillespie. And it's what's funding the Republicans.
And remember, Karl Rove was Bush's brain.
Yeah, Bush's senior advisor.
Yeah.
Now, George Bush's. Okay. Who's funding Americans' Crossroads? This is by Corporate Greed, Sarah Lewis. Lately, we've been talking about vast amounts of money that the super wealthy have been pouring into politics with the hope of buying elections for pro-corporation anti-worker candidates who will further tip the scales of power against working people's interests. One of the key front groups of the 1% is Crossroads. Crossroads is actually multiple groups formed by former GOP operatives Karl Rove and Ed Gillespie with the shared goal of electing anti-worker candidates. The most important entities within the Crossroads family are American Crossroads and Crossroads GSP, or GPS, rather. American Crossroads is a super PAC organized under the IRS Code Section 527. Super PACs are independent expenditure only committees with the express purpose of electing or defeating candidates. The famous Citizens United line of cases lifted federal prohibitions on these groups accepting donations or corporations and unions. And now, independent expenditures are the vast growing category of campaign spending, though unions remain a fraction of all political spending. Even though these groups can accept money from just about anyone, they have a legal obligation to disclose to the Federal Election Commission where their funds are coming from, so we are able to find out who's funding the right-wing attack machine. So who is funding American Crossroads? There's Harold Simmons, who Rolling Stone reports traffics in toxic chemicals and hazardous waste as head of Contrain, owns one of the world's largest producers of titanium. A former corporate raider named Iceman, he pioneered the leveraged buyout tactics that decimated American industry. Plans to store radioactive waste from the 36 states in an underground dump in Texas has been sued repeatedly by the Justice Department for failing to clean up contaminated Superfund sites. Simmons also funds the infamous Swiftboat Veterans for Truth group back in 2004 and has already given more than $18 million to GOP candidates, PACs, and 501c4 groups. Simmons also has given through his holding company, Contrain. Then there's billionaire real estate magnate Bob Perry, who has made a name for himself through GOP campaign contributions as much as a shoddy construction, as for shoddy construction. And let's not forget billionaire coal man Joe Kraft, who has a thing for running dangerous coal mines. This list of contributors also includes Crow Holding, controlled by Harry and Crow, a good buddy of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and collector of statues of dictators. The other major wing of the Crossroads empire, Crossroads GPS, is classified as a 501c4 social welfare organization, the entity type preferred by corporations and others who do not wish for their political activities to be known because such groups provide no disclosure of donors. In fact, Crossroads political director Kyle Forte actually stated in a public forum hosted by factcheck.org that Crossroads GPS was formed because some donors didn't want to be disclosed and were more comfortable giving to an entity that keeps donors' names secret. Sometimes, though, corporations end up accidentally spilling the beans on their own, like when insurance giant Aetna accidentally made public more than $10 million in political contributions to pro-business groups. And the Crossroads groups are expected to spend $300 million in the 2012 election cycle. So far, disclosed spending of the American Crossroads has already exceeded $12 million on races that have just are beginning or has reportedly spent nearly $42 million so far. Even with all that money, it still doesn't look like American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS can afford to be honest. While Karl Rove has tried to brag about his attacks, fact checkers continue to point out the misleading editing and all-out lies used in Crossroads ads. Crossroads GPS even had to pull an ad they ran against North Dakota Senate candidate Heidi Heitkamp because it was so grossly false, but ended up running a misleading replacement that was still full of misinformation. And that's what they're doing. I mean, it's a total misleading campaign funded by monster donors, you know, corporate crooks. And pretty sad, rather. There is one other one that kind of, actually there's more than those two. I thought that was interesting. You want to read one here?
Yep.
You feel like reading one?
Sure.
Right. Alec funnels turns dollars to corporate profits. It's not a very long one.
Okay.
But it's important because it introduces you to the American legislation, Legislative Exchange Council, or a legislator for every corporation.
This is by Mike Hall. We've traced the fingerprints of the American Legislative Exchange Council to the growing voter suppression efforts in more than a dozen states under Republican control in recent election season blog posts. But don't forget the extremist corporate-backed ALEC is attacking workers' families on many fronts. A new report from In the Republic Interest tracks ALEC's footprints down the path of privatization. Profiting from public dollars, how ALEC and its members promote privatization of government service and assets exposes ALEC's extensive privatization agenda. The report details how private prison corporations, online education companies, healthcare corporations, and major industry players pay large membership fees to ALEC in exchange for valuable and unfettered access to state legislators. Corporations are able to work with ALEC law members to create bills that allow private control of public functions, enhancing corporate pocketbooks and lucrative government tax contracts and taxpayer dollars. In 2011 and 2012, ALEC modeled bills that sought to privatize core public functions were introduced in states across the country, including Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Montana, Ohio, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Utah. You can read the full report in the public interest and be sure to visit www.alecexposed.org by the Center for Media and Democracy. Well, that's a little scary.
Isn't that scary? I mean, we have so little.
It's almost like, you know, we're running so far behind trying to catch up with these people.
And I wanted to talk about this one tonight too, because I think it's really if you're interested in how Romney, or more about Romney, it says a new report. Romney's Bain Capital linked to union suppression case.
Wow.
And it's kind of like, this is interesting, because it tells a lot about this bastard. Okay. Although Mitt Romney continues to try and distance himself from his record of offshoring U.S. jobs overseas during his tenure at Bain Capital, a new report by the Financial Times, Robin Harding, shows there were even more anti-worker tactics occurring under Romney's watch at the company. Now we might understand.
Gary.
Yeah. Now we might understand more about why he boasted earlier this year that he's taken on union bosses before. According to the U.S. District Court and federal documents, key airlines controlled by Bain Capital at the time ran an unlawful campaign to stop the organization of a union in the 1980s. Mitt Romney was a director of the airline, according to regulatory filings, and a shareholder in the company. The Financial Times put together this report and document from the National Mediation Board in 1986 and a 1992 judgment in the U.S. District Court for the District of Nevada. Financial Times reports key airlines, an early investment for the private equity firm founded by a young Mitt Romney and two associates, broke the law by attempting to coerce and then dismiss two pilots who tried to organize a union. 2 months after the union vote failed, Bain agreed to sell key airlines at a large profit in 1986. Those two key airline pilots later brought the union suppression case to court. In 1992, Roger Foley, federal judge for the District of Nevada, wrote, "The anti-union activities in this case were not merely unfair labor practices, as Key argues, but blatant, grievous, willful, deliberate, and repeated violations of the Railway Labor Law, or Labor Act." This is what Romney is all about.
Yep.
You know, I mean, why would anybody in their damn right minds vote for this guy unless they were multi-billionaires who wanted to bust unions? You know, anybody else is an idiot, right? According to the Financial Times, Key Airlines was a small charter carrier with a military contract to ferry personnel to bases on the Nevada desert. The union effort was suppressed by Bain's ownership in 1985 and 86 through a court judgment against the company and its management. Including Bain Capital, founding partner T. Coleman Andrews III did not come until 1992. The judgment was later qualified by a subsequent court ruling in 1994, together with an agreement to settle an appeal. Citing safety concerns, in 1985, key airline pilots, co-pilots, and flight engineers planned to organize a union. Financial Times reports management began to coerce the pilots after they heard a union was forming. According to this court ruling, Key held coercive meetings with pilots, said management would leave and the company lose contracts, and told pilot that salaries, bonuses, and benefits would be frozen. Federal labor law forbid an airline to interfere in any way with the organization of its employees. And although outsourcer-in-chief Mitt Romney would like us to believe he invested in companies that created U.S. jobs, his record of shipping jobs overseas at Bain Capital speak for itself. And now we have this pressing voter right to collective bargaining, to collectively bargain to the long list of anti-worker tactics Romney and Bain Capital employed. So, there we go, folks. That's so much for this wannabe schmuck president. Okay? And I don't know. What do you think? I don't know what to say about this anymore. I'm just, I can't read enough bad stuff about this chick.
Well, maybe you got to do that.
What?
Look, of course, for more stuff to substantiate how you feel. And we just keep reading it until the election.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see anything else that we can do.
I don't either, personally.
You just have to keep bringing up the stuff that he stands for, his plans that he's developed, and keep pushing them out there.
Yeah,
so
somebody can hear. Somebody has to hear this stuff and not vote for this schmuck. You know, God. Like, here's something. Outside money influences elections from the president to the local sheriff.
This person is from, where are they from?
What
were you just reading there?
It says, what do you mean, what was I reading?
Who was the author?
Sarah Lewis.
Lewis
girl, I know. She wrote for Corporate Greed, I think, or something.
Oh, okay.
We've been talking a lot lately about the current financial state of play in electoral politics. Despite the mega finances poured into the current election cycle, working families have more power than they think, power at the polls. It's not just the presidential race that's being flooded with money. Every political race, from your local sheriff to the state and local judges to your state governors and legislators, is receiving more donations from an ever greedier financial elite. The National Institute on Money and State Politics reveals that 2012 races for state governor have already attracted more than $145 million. State Senate races are just shy of $157 million. Right now, and state House races are already more than $215 million. Even judgeships come at a cost. More than $19 million has been contributed to state appellate and high court judicial races. All told, more than $747 million has been raised in state and local races so far in the 2012 election cycle. Imagine that.
I find it hard to imagine.
Yeah, that's a lot. I mean, almost
$1 billion.
Three-quarters of $1 billion raised to buy judges and everybody else, you know. Almost $300 million is known to have come from business interests, while less than $50 million has come from labor unions. And it's still too early to tell how bad it's going to get in state races. With widely varying levels of disclosure from state to state, you may not even know how much money folks like David Koch are spending to influence your state and local government. While some of the outside money in state and local government comes from entities that disclose donors, typically 527s, including those associated with political parties like the Democratic Governors Association. Much of the money through non-disclosing entities. But even with many corporations contributed to both sides, Republican committees that disclose outspent disclosing Democratic committees 2-1 in 2010. It is too early to accurately measure spending in 2012, but those Republican committees have so far outfunded the Democratic committees 2.5-1. The top three contributors in 2012 to the RGA are Koch Industries, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Las Vegas Sands. The only thing that surprises me is that Obama personally has raised $800 and something million, and Romney has only raised $528 million or something. So there's a disparity in these figures. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And state and local races often run a more immediate effect on our lives than federal elections. These are the folks who write our state and local laws. The judges who determine who go to jail, the school board members who shape our children's education. When wealthy out-of-state interests dominate local elections, working people lose. Let's not forget the outcome of the record-breaking $2.5 billion 2010 election cycle, which led to a series of assaults on the rights of working people, especially women, immigrants, and people of color. And last year, a Denver school board election ended up flooded with money from oil men and bankers. And now it looks like, I mean, that's a local school board election was flooded with banker and oil company money. Imagine that. And now it looks like all the chambers of commerce money flowing into state elections is pushing the Republicans ever further toward the right. But people power can still trump financial power. Fight back against these billionaires who want to take away your rights at the polls and at work and silence your voice. You can stand up to the money avalanche by volunteering with your local union, central labor council, or workers' voice for neighborhood canvassing, phone banks, and other actions, and you can help make sure voting rights are protected for all by visiting the AFL-CIO. My vote, my right, site here. So with that, I'm going to end tonight's show, and I want to thank everybody. And please go to the AFL-CIO blog. Check that out. A lot of interesting news. Check out the Ask Me Council 4 .org blog. That's in Connecticut here, but it cites a lot of national news. And check out your local areas for what they're doing. And stand behind those Walmart workers. Stand behind your unions and public workers. So I want to thank everyone, and we wish you a pleasant evening.
Good night, folks.
And please join me tomorrow night when I delve into, when we're right back here again. All right? Good night, everybody.
Good night. Have a good night.
Closing music. Good night, everybody.